Radio.
Yeah, Ben Stiller is a comedian, yeah.
Yes, he is, son of Jerry Stiller.
And Jerry Stiller and Annie Mira, yeah.
And he has a production company called Red Hour Productions.
You're kidding.
Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate.
But Red Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher, I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Spock.
Whoops!
Yes.
Got a place to sleep it off yet? Go around to Rager's house. He's got rooms. But you'll have to hurry. It's almost the red hour.
I can admit when I'm losing my mind a little bit. Especially about Star Trek. I can admit when something starts to infatuate me and I need to go to the Tantalus colony to have that weird beam of light, the Tantalus device, rob my mind of all sorts of impure thoughts. Or maybe a Shades of Grey thing where Dr. Pulaski makes me think about other stuff to purge this virus that's in my head. I can admit when I get a little obsessive, when I get obsession. What's that smell? Sweet, honey-like. It's from the episode Obsession. It's a good episode. I've been fixated on Return of the Archons. You know this if you've been listening to this podcast. You know that I kind of lost my mind a little bit about this. I've talked about it at least on 3 different episodes. I've talked to Eddie Paskey, who was sort of the stand-in for Bill Shatner. He was in about 56 episodes, in the background all the time. Lieutenant Leslie had a couple lines here and there. I talked with Carl Held, who was in Return of the Archons, had a couple of lines. Nice guy. Had a good conversation with him because I'm infatuated with this guy who you just heard. Your daddy can take him in, can he? When I was talking to Carl, Carl mentioned that he was actually friends with this guy, Lev Mailer. And after I got done with the conversation, I thought, I wonder if Lev Mailer is still around. And so as this obsession goes on, as this is my white whale, if my heart were big enough, I would shoot a cannon out of it. That's from First Contact. I decided to see if I could find Lev Mailer, and sure enough, he was still with us. And through a little bit of internet sleuthing, I was able to find, I don't even want to tell you how I dug deep enough to find, but I found his phone number. My God, I lost my mind. I found his phone number, and I called him. I called him like 2 or 3 days before Christmas, just to give you the idea of this. I had like dental surgery on the 22nd. And I can't remember if it was before or after. I had a little halcyon, little laughing gas to kind of make me forget about stuff. That's what I should have had. That's what should have stopped me from doing this. But nonetheless, I called him. I talked to his wife. She's a wonderful woman. And then she gave me the number, and then he called me, and then I called him back. And here's the weird thing. I've talked to a lot of people on this show so far, and I was really nervous about talking to him because this guy, he is iconic. He is the return of the icon. This great read he has. And I was finally going to talk to him after being so enthralled with all these years. Lev Mailer, who lives in Minnesota right now, I was going to chat with him. I don't know why these things thrill me so much. As a spoiler, I'm an actor on occasion, and I play small parts generally. I'm a big guy who plays small parts. And so maybe that's what intrigues me so much. Maybe that's why I'm not as thrilled to talk to someone like William Shatner, because these are the roles I've played. I played these small, kooky, fun roles. And it's so amazing to find out where these people get these reads from and all this sort of stuff. And Lev's a great guy. And as I was talking with him, I stumbled across something else which I wasn't actually aware of. And Lev, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I didn't quite do all my research. Maybe I did. I just didn't realize it. But Lev was the first guy to be in Star Trek and Star Wars, the Star Wars holiday special. Remember we talked about that a little while ago? He was in both. He's the first guy to be in both of these epic franchises. Lev has crossed through 2 different dimensions. If only he was in like a Marvel movie or something like that, he'd be perfect. One of the cool things about this podcast, which you'll hear, and you were already teased, is that Lev wasn't unaware of the fact that Ben Stiller named his production company after a line that he said. In fact, I tweeted that fact to Ben Stiller, and Ben Stiller and I had a little conversation back and forth about that. And he was fascinated by that. Can you imagine that? After 50 years of doing a small part on a science fiction television show, realizing that it perpetuated on, that it created something which created more and more things, and you're just finding out about this? That's amazing. The other cool thing is that he had talked about Carl Held, and Carl Held talked about him, but they hadn't talked for years and years and years. So I was able to give each other their phone numbers, and from what I understand, they called each other. That was cool, too. Of course, the coolest thing about all of this is that after our conversation, Lev called me back, and he said, what's your address? And I gave it to him, and he sent me an autographed card for Mike from Ralph Maurer, which I guess is his other name, and on it, it says Festival. I shouldn't be this excited about this stuff, but I am. And so without further ado, my conversation with Lev/Ralph Mailer Maurer. Okay, I think we got it figured out now. And I'm going to call him. I just talked to Lev, and we're going to call him right now and see if we can get this going. So let's get this party started, because it's almost the red hour.
Hello.
Lev, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is so great. I had a hard time talking to your wife. I had my microphone off, but now I'm ready to go.
Okay, well, yes, make sure you have your technology lined up.
It is all set. It is all set. Thanks. Thank you so much. You're on the podcast. I just want to talk about Star Trek as we speak. So congratulations, yeah. Or sorry.
Well, at some point, I'll give myself a little plug about what I'm doing out here in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Oh, I'd love that. That's exactly what I want. I want to know about you, a little bit about Star Trek, and then know about who you are.
Right.
So, I've been talking to a couple of your accomplices from Return of the Archons. I talked to Carl Held a couple of days ago.
Oh, Carl. Yeah, Carl and I went to school together.
I think he mentioned that.
Did he tell you went to the neighborhood playhouse?
He mentioned something about that.
Did he mention that at all?
Yeah. Well, tell me more about that.
Carl and I were in the same class at the neighborhood playhouse, and since we both spoke German, we were attracted to one another. And then I was pleasantly surprised when I came out to California, when I worked at Return of the Archon, there was Carl.
Oh, that's so great. So the neighborhood playhouse is in New York, is that correct?
Yes, New York City. Yes, it's run by a man named, it was at that time, Sanford Meisner, who was a great acting teacher.
Yes, I know about the Meisner technique. Now, I'm an actor myself.
Okay, there it is.
So, yeah.
That was what the neighborhood playhouse was. Yep.
Yeah, and my wife took Meisner, and I did not. But I like hearing about. What was Meisner like? You worked with him. What was he like?
Well, he was a very exacting man. He knew what he wanted, and, you tried to learn and understand and do it. See, that's his concept of acting, the doing.
Mm-hmm. And so you do it. I remember my wife was talking about she had lots of lessons where you just said hello to someone over and over again. Did you have to do that?
Well, I don't know about the hello. I don't know where that comes from. It depends on who the teacher is, because sometimes these teachers who allegedly studied with Meisner have evolved what they want, but it's called the repetition exercise. You don't do hello. But you will repeat something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know who your wife studied with, but having taught now for almost 40 years, I'm familiar with what Meisner taught, and I'm familiar with others teach in the name of Meisner.
Right, because it's almost like an oral history, isn't it? It changes a little bit from person to person. All these techniques.
Well, what you do finally as an acting teacher, you evolve what works for you and you try to pass it on to other people so it can work for them.
You know, I've been doing this podcast for a little while and I've talked, like I said, with a lot of people like Carl Held. I've talked with Eddie Paskey. I've talked with a lot of Star Trek people. And I've learned a lot just listening to people talk about their process and what makes them go as far as an actor. It's been fascinating for me. It's really, really, it's been really enlightening for me.
Mm-hmm.
So you are no exception. We've been working our way through this Return of the Archons, and do you understand that your phrase, the Red Hour, is semi-famous? Do you know that?
I'm sure you know. I thought Festival was the famous line.
Festival's pretty good. But do you know about Ben Stiller's
No, I don't
production?
Know about the Red Hour, as a matter of fact.
Have you ever heard of Ben Stiller?
Yeah, Ben Stiller is a comedian, yeah.
Yes, he is, a son of Jerry Stiller.
Jerry Stiller and Annie Mira, yeah.
And he has a production company called Red Hour Productions.
You're kidding.
And it is based upon the Red Hour, that it's almost the Red Hour because of what you said. That's what he did. So all of those films that are coming out for Red Hour are because of you, Lev, and your enunciation.
Yes, what I said, exactly.
You see, you didn't know that. See, now you know that. You can go ahead and tell your students. It's like, hey, every time you see a Red Hour production, you know, by Ben Stiller, like Zoolander and all those kind of films.
As a matter of fact, I'll take you up on that, Mike. Let me jot that down.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I thought you knew this. This is big news here.
No, I didn't know that at all. Ben Stiller.
Oh yeah, you have launched. Now Ben Stiller's a huge Star Trek fan, so you know that's why he named it Red Hour. And I'm sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, finally after many years, I began to realize that Return of the Archons was one of the better.
It is. It's
one of the better segments.
Oh yeah. Well, see. For me, if you're talking about Star Trek, it's one of the most reflective of what Star Trek was, which is you go to an alien society which is somehow dysfunctional that we can all see, but they can't, and then the crew fixes it in some way.
Yeah, so then we relate to the crew of the Enterprise, and therefore we straighten out our lives.
Exactly.
Philosophically.
Exactly. It's the cultural imperialism of Starfleet and by extension America coming in and fixing things that maybe don't need to be fixed.
Right. Fix up all the areas that have problems.
Because at the end of the episode, there's fighting and looting that happens thanks to Captain Kirk and the rest of the crew.
Yes.
So, but Tom,
you know, I ended up with cards. In the Star Trek card game, my picture said it Return of the Archons. And then in 2011, a guy called me up, and he was doing trading cards.
Oh.
And I signed a whole bunch of trading cards. So there are actually two cards with my picture in Return of the Archons. One is the trading cards, and the other is the Star Trek card game, which I believe was created in 95.
Okay. Yeah, I think I might have had that, actually. I'll be honest with you. I'm a big fan. I had that. Not a great game. I got to be honest. It wasn't a great game. I didn't quite understand it. But it was cool to have the cards. I don't know if I had
your
card. Well, let's talk a little bit about this episode here. So how did you get this role?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Here I rolled into California. I'd been working on a stage in New York. And on a lark, I went to California. You know, nobody was looking for me.
Right.
And lo and behold, here was Ernie Lasso, who was also with Carl Held and me at the Neighborhood Playhouse. Ah, Ernie now is a casting director for, you know, Lucille Ball's company.
Desi Lou. Okay, yep.
Desi Lou, exactly. And so, through Ernie, I was able to work all the shows.
Oh.
You would say I don't say he did it. I went in and auditioned, you know.
Sure.
I remember auditioning for the Lucy show in a shirt that wasn't ironed because he was a grubby character.
Okay. Oh, okay. Great.
And so I did the Lucy show, I did Star Trek, I did Mannix, and I did...
Mission Impossible, right?
Mission Impossible, exactly. Yeah.
What was it like working with Lucy, just briefly?
Well, we got on very well.
Good, good.
Very well. And I liked New York Jewish guys. She was married to one at the time.
Ah. So. Well, good. And Mission Impossible, tell me about that a little bit. You played a sergeant in that.
I said to Marty Landau, I said, Marty, how come you can play a South American native with your blue eyes? He said, I'll tell you, man, it's television.
That
is, in other words, you can get away with it because it's television.
You can do whatever you want because it's television, yeah. And the stakes are low, right?
The stakes are low. Exactly.
You know, another episode is going to come on the next week, and it's all forgiven.
So I'll tell you a story about Return of the Archives, since this is really the purpose.
You
remember when we're marching at the beginning in kind of lockstep?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was really nervous, and I couldn't get it right. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I can't even walk on the beat. What the hell is going on here? Joe Pevney, who himself was a nice actor, worked in the 40s in movies, was the director. And he walked over to me, and he took my hand like a father, and he walked with me until I settled down.
So he kind of gave you your marching orders, sort of. He kind of walked you through that a little bit until you
got
it.
Yeah, he walked me through it, exactly.
Well, you know, I want to talk to you about a couple other things. I wanted to kind of save this for last, but let's just get into it, because this is my favorite scene pretty much ever of Star Trek, is when you show up. Because... Mm-hmm. You are talking from, you're literally talking from a different planet, but your performance is so odd and so remarkable that it every single line is completely quotable. It's so amazing. It's Bilar. It's Bilar, right? Or Bilar, or what? How do you?
Bilar.
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 Bilar is he's amazing. And I read recently that you were kind of doing a 19th century, like, northeastern accent. And that everyone
yes,
else,
that's true.
You thought everyone else was going to do that, and no one did it.
No one did it, yeah. So I was the only one who kind of had a kind of like, you know, Vermont or New Hampshire, that kind of thing. And I, you know, modified it so it wouldn't be too overt, but it was something like that. So it really made me sound really weird.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good, Lev. I mean, it really captures the oddness of the whole scene. I mean, everyone else is just kind of talking and kind of in the slow motion, kind of like they're walking through Jell-O. But you come out there, you know, your daddy can take him in, can he? I mean,
yeah,
that, like,
yeah, your daddy can take him in, can't he?
Yes, it's so good. I mean,
my God, all those insipid words are suddenly immortal. I can't believe it.
Every single one. Tula.
Yeah,
your daddy can take him in. You better hurry. It's almost the red hour.
You know, it's so. I must have been so naive, Mike. It's only after I saw the show on television, I said, "Oh my God, I must have raped her."
Oh gosh, yes, you didn't realize that.
I didn't realize. I pulled her. I grabbed her. You know, and we went off camera.
Yes,
and that was it. As soon as we went off camera, you know, I put her down. I said, "Are you all right?" She said, "I'm fine." And that was the last I saw of her.
I choose to think that it was something else, that maybe you grabbed her and the two of you went looting. I'm always going to be of that opinion.
Yeah, all right. No, that's fine, because I don't know. The script doesn't have any resolution.
No.
So you're probably as right as I am.
Yeah, you know, there was supposed to be, with Carl, I read that, and he didn't know this either, that there was a subplot that was taken out where he was sort of in love with Tula. He'd sort of fallen for her. Because later on he says, oh, that girl, you know, like, what happened to her? You know, it's Rhaegar's daughter. So I think that there was definitely something about that which was kind of left undone. You also, out of nowhere... when the red hour hits, you have this strange club which looks like a big submarine sandwich from the edit. It's like this big brown thing you have. Do you remember that?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't remember it.
Because you come up, you're like, Tula, come, and you take this thing and you strike, I think it's Carl Held, I think you strike him and knock him out.
I remember it. I remember hitting somebody, but I don't remember, I must say, I don't remember the club.
It just appeared out of nowhere, like, because you're just walking, you're just like, you know, come for the festival, and you have both your hands are completely empty, and all of a sudden the red hour hits, and this thing pops in your hand, this brown hoagie pops in your hand, and you whack this guy, and then you, Tula, come, and then you walk off with her.
Yeah,
Yeah, that I remember, Tula Kum, yeah.
Yeah, that's, it's, see, Lev, it's been 50 years, and you have a fan right now who knows every single one of your lines.
Well, I know. I'm really touched by it, Mike, because it was just, you know, another little job for me.
I know.
I'll tell you a fact that one of my students told me, who is a big Star Wars person.
Yes.
He told me, first actor who crossed over from Star Trek to Star Wars. Because I was in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes, I want to know about that. Tell me about that, because I just read that on your IMDb. You've done them both, Lev. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, and I was the first one. George Takei. He thought he was, but I ended up beating him by about a couple of years. In the two.
Okay.
Because one was in 65 and the other was in 78.
Right. Yeah, the Star Trek special, or the Star Wars Holiday special was in 78. And so you got hired on to do that. And I, forgive me, because, you know, that is such a cult classic. They don't show that. You cannot.
No, because Lucas hated it. I call it the bastard child of George Lucas.
Yes.
Because he didn't. But now that Disney owns it, I told my friend who's part of a huge, you know, group of Star Trek people who love the Star Trek Hollywood holiday special. I said, why don't you put pressure on Disney to re-release it? I'm sure they'll be able to make money out of it because now they've bred so many fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has to be, I mean, the outcry for it and the money which would be spent to see that, because I saw it when I was a kid. I saw it and I was completely baffled, Lev. I don't know if you saw it when it aired. It aired once and then never again.
Yeah, I saw it when it went air.
And there's Harvey Korman.
Yeah, it was about Chewbacca going home for Christmas. You know, that's what it was. Chewie getting home for Christmas.
And you were
what it was.
So were you on set with Chewbacca and all those characters?
No, I was one of the Imperial Guards. I came in and I had a whole scene with Art Carney.
Oh, right. Okay. So, but none of the Wookiees were there, or were the Wookiees there?
No, it was just Art and I were the incomplete scene.
Okay. So you didn't see Harrison Ford or Carrie Fisher?
No, I just worked with Art Carney.
Which in and of itself is pretty amazing, too, to work
with
Norton.
Well, yes.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Because when I was a kid, I watched The Honeymooners.
Oh, they're so good. They're still so good. Amazing. Yeah. So, have you ever been to a Star Wars like fan festival and be like, "Oh my God, you're Imperial Guard number one"?
As a matter of fact, the people here last year, which was the 78. It was about 35th, the 35th year.
Mm-hmm.
They've invited me to come to, I think it was in 13, to come to a meeting and to be a guest, but I didn't do it. But they came over here and I did a recording.
Oh,
I did a
great
recording, which they played a video that I did for them here in my home. And then they took it to the meeting of the Star Trek people. But I didn't go. So no, I've been to a couple of Star Trek, get together here, and of course I went to the Grand Slam, which was an experience in Pasadena.
Yeah.
And there was a student of mine who came along, and he said, "What are you looking for, Chris?" He said, "Well, I want to get Star Trek on a shot glass and on a cigarette ashtray." I said, "Are you kidding?" Both of them. They must have had a million different objects there. Boy, they had vendors that were selling Star Trek on, you name it, toilet paper. You know, you stick your finger in your ear with a, you know, something to clean out the wax, and it'd be on the wax. And just the most amazing product. And I was sitting at a desk looking down. You know, I was sitting there signing autographs on my picture. And suddenly from above, I heard a voice say, "You've never been here before." And I look up and I said, "No, that's true. I've never been to a convention." He says, "I know." And he opens up his book, and it has every single segment of the 3 years. And in it, there's a slot and a name. And he goes to Return of the Archons, finds my name. He hands me a card, and I sign it.
Wow. These are the people you're working with, Lev. These are the people we have dedicated our lives to, something that was just a moment of yours.
Yeah, it was an insignificant moment in my life that, you know, became so fantastic because, you know, when in the 3 years that Star Trek was on NBC at about 8 o'clock at night, the kids didn't see it.
No.
So Roddenberry puts it into syndication in the 70s. And you come home from school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's Star Trek. Well, that's the beginning of the Trekkies.
That was me, Lev. That was me. Like Saturday afternoons, right after Petticoat Junction reruns. Yep. That was me watching it and watching Return of the Archons and going, "What is going on here?" You were also in Patterns of Force too. Is that correct?
No. You mean where I played the Nazi?
Yeah,
the Nazi character of.
The you also played a lieutenant.
It wasn't Panzer Force. I forget the title.
It says an SS lieutenant you played.
Yeah, SS, and Leonard pinches me and steals my uniform.
Yeah. Now, was it fun coming back for that?
I would have frankly come back. I'd like to come back for a more juicy part, but I was just working.
Yeah.
Trying to work as an actor to get established in California.
Sure. And, you know, back then you could shoot multiple seasons of this and no one would care. Now, with reruns and stuff, we instantly say, wait, he was on two episodes. What's going on with that? So, but that's it. We'll push that one to the side. It's the Return of the Archons, which is where you really are preserved in digital amber on this.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I'm the only one of the segment to have a card in both the card game and the trading cards.
See, there you go. And you have a production company named after one of your lines.
Yeah, my famous lines. Now I know Ben Stiller's company. Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is great. Wow. Well, Lev, I actually have to go. I have to go to a Christmas party.
Yeah, I know.
Right now.
You said Paula told me you'd have to leave at 5 o'clock. So I was wondering why you. You keep babbling with me if you got to go to somewhere at 5 o'clock.
Because I'm so excited, Lev. This is so... I've interviewed a lot of people, and for some reason, I was the most nervous about talking to you because you just nailed that role. You're just so good.
Thank you very much, Mike. Yeah.
I mean, because the red hour's at 6, but this is at 5. So we're so close to it. Can you give me that line? Can you tell me that I have to go because it's almost...
It's almost the red hour.
Oh, good. Oh, that's so good. Oh, but you know, I can take you in, can he? That's what I'm going to say. Anytime you want to come back to this podcast, Lev, I would love to have you on it. This is so great. I'm so excited.
Well, if you think about me in a period of time, give me another call.
You got it, sir. You got it.
Yeah.
Well, Lev, we'll direct people to levmaylor.com.
LevMailer.com, yeah.
Yes, and thank you so much for showing up here, and have a great holiday.
Okay, Mike.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, how about that? And my son is right here. He was listening to all that. Kiernan, what did you think?
Amazing.
Pretty cool, huh? Have you ever seen your dad this excited to talk to someone? No, he's had his tonsils out. I had some dental work yesterday, so it's been a rough holiday. Until your daddy can take him in, can he? You better hurry, it's almost the red hour. My son's laughing, but I'm so excited. Wow, thanks so much for listening to this. This was great. We talked to Bilar or Bala or whatever his name is. It doesn't matter. Six lines preserved for eternity in Star Trek. I'm so excited. My name is Mike McCafferty. See you next time, because I just want to talk about what, Kiernan?
Imperfection.
When the train comes in, everybody runs.
Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban, and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans, and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air, and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype, and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve-a-pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.